Hello, and welcome to another episode of the CBO Speaks podcast. I'm your host, Donna Shealy. So glad to have you all with us today. Today's guest is Peter Elliott. He is the Vice President for Administrative Services for the South Florida State College. Hello, Peter. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
Great, great, great. Great to have you. So I always like everyone to start off with going back to their days of undergrad. So we go way back and we start there. So I believe you were at Santa Fe College. Is that correct? Well, take us back there to Santa Fe College, what you majored in, and kind of lead us through to where you are today.
When I was at Santa Fe, I was basically an AA transfer student. So, working on Associate of Arts, transferred to Florida State after that. Kind of discovered accounting while I was there, which is, so I'm an accountant by training. Was working in a McDonald's and took a couple of business classes and kind of enjoyed accounting. So that's kind of the path I took. Went on to Florida State, got my undergraduate degree there and a master's degree, and jumped out into the workforce.
And were you an accountant when you first started out, right out of school?
Yeah, actually, I worked for the Auditor General's Office for the state of Florida. I did that for about 10 years, working primarily in the education space, auditing colleges, universities, school districts, Department of Education, and for the state. I counted once. I think I've worked in 7 colleges or universities and 4 school districts. So a lot of education.
Yeah, a lot of education. Well, talk to us about how you made that transition to higher ed. When did that happen?
So that was in the late 90s, in the run up to, how far back we're going to go.
Yeah.
in the run up to Y2K, actually. I was the team leader for the audit at Broward College in Fort Lauderdale. And the associate controller was retiring. They were in a consortium of other colleges building an ERP to accommodate the Y2K event. and so I got approached by the controller, said, hey, if you're interested, we think you'd be a good fit. That was always complicated conversation, because if I apply for a job there, I'm never going back.
Yeah.
Independence rules are such that you're pretty much done with that. But my father was a college professor, so I've always been in and around colleges, and so getting into education was something I was interested in doing. So I made the jump. Was there for about 10 years, and then jumped from there to Polk State College here in Central Florida, nearby me. And then I've been here at South Florida State College for 3 years.
What was some of the challenges or anything that may have surprised you when you did jump into higher ed?
I remember having this conversation with the controller I worked for, that, the big surprise, and it shouldn't have been a surprise, but was, is that you go from an environment where, on the audit side, everybody's professional, doesn't quite come off right, but you've got CPAs and professional staff and master's degrees and whatever, and it's, you give them an assignment, you say I need it by Friday, and Friday they bring it back to you. Well, you go into operating accounting department, you've got a mix of a couple of accountants, professional staff, and then you've got career staff that are clerks and, other kind of, and they need more kind of hands-on, I wouldn't call it management, but, hands-on attention. So that was a good tip from him to me, cause it made me stop to think about it. But probably the hardest thing, to be honest with you, was coming from audit, you have your audit plan and your schedule of things you want to get done this week, and you kind of work down your checklist and you're going through all of that. And I get to the end of the first week at the college, And I had my list of things I wanted to accomplish that week, and I hadn't accomplished any of those, and I had four more items on my list. So the random thing that comes through your door in the morning can completely disrupt your day. And quite frankly, that's been ever since. I kind of jokingly like to say, when people ask me how things are going, every day is an adventure. And usually they're pretty good adventures, but every once in a while they're a little more exciting than you want them to be.
Yeah, right. To say the least, I'm sure. So talk to us about everything that you are responsible for now here at South Florida State College.
Pretty much the gamut of, I like to joke, I'm the vice president of everything else, whatever the other vice presidents don't want to do, but it's, finance, HR, purchasing, bursar, IT, facilities, safety and risk management. And then, yeah, just kind of whatever other things that come up.
Whatever just happens to fall from the other VPs over. Yeah. So you get that as well. Now that you are in this position now, it seems like you made your transition right during the pandemic.
Yeah, that was interesting. We're a small rural college in the heartland of Florida. Everybody had the same kind of pandemic effects. We were all, moving to remote instruction and dealing with people being out and all of those things. But realistically, we probably weren't as remote as a lot of places, for a variety of reasons. We're a kind of a comprehensive community college, as my previous president used to refer to it. So we have everything from auto body and auto mechanics and HVAC technicians to your traditional AA transfer. And then we've got nursing and law enforcement and a lot of those programs don't do remote instruction or don't do it as a significant portion of their course load. So, we were never 100% remote, and being small, some of our business processes were paper intensive. So we were having to juggle, accounting department, for example, people would come in, a couple of days a week and do things. So probably didn't affect us as significantly in that way as you would see maybe with a large metropolitan institution. And like I say, we're rural, so, people don't live right on top of each other either. So
right.
That wasn't such a problem, but, it was, there was a lot going on, and it was a lot to kind of take in. I have to give my predecessor credit. I actually took this job. My predecessor, had been in the job for 35 years. I came in the middle of it, but I was picking up a fairly well-organized kind of process. So it wasn't like I was just handed a bunch of stuff and go, here, do this in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, someone who had been there for so long. My goodness. So, yeah, but because of that was definitely a different something that obviously wasn't expected. So I know you had to do some pivoting. But yeah, that's great. So tell us a little bit more you gave us a little bit about South Florida State College, but I'm seeing that it's a cultural focal point in your area. Talk to us a little bit about that. And you're also a highly minority enrollment school too.
We're an HSI. That is presents a challenge. Not being HSI presents a challenge, but being kind of the cultural touchstone in the community, presents some great opportunities, but also has some challenges. We have a performing arts center, seats 1500. We have a great program of shows to kind of meet all of the needs of the community. Our area is very seasonal residents. We're in the middle of high season for our seasonal residents. We have a lot of Michiganers and Midwesterners who come to get out of the snow and cold and come down for the winter months. And so we have a program of events that caters to that. Although, you know, we are kind of dealing with a changing demographic in that way as well. And we actually are kind of revisiting, you know, what our program offerings are in the theater to try and recenter with the community that coming to our events. So that's a completely separate thing. I have to say that's not something that I was doing in either of my previous institutions. So that becomes some interesting conversations about contracting and scheduling. And, you know, it's got security concerns. We've got technology we've got to invest in that, you know, a lot of schools don't or don't at scale. So it's been a learning experience.
I'm sure. But it sounds fun, though. It sounds exciting. So talk to me a little bit about some of the challenges that you've had, like throughout your career. It doesn't have to just be at South Florida State College, but some challenges that you've had and some of the hard lessons you've had to learn that you know, you look back, you say, you know what? I could have done that differently, or, you know, I like how I did that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest challenge we're having, I would say right now, one that I think, you know, a lot of institutions are having, but is kind of particularly challenging, I think, for us, is just hiring.
Yeah.
Again, we're 60 miles south of Orlando. And, you know, being in a rural community, there's not a whole population of people I can draw from for adjunct instructors, or if I need an IT person, or a lot of kind of staff positions even, you know, so we've struggled to fill some positions, and particularly, you know, we're losing IT people to positions where they can work remotely. So we're having to adapt to that, which, again, you know, wasn't really something on our radar necessarily. So we're trying to adapt to that. If you can work remotely and you want to live in Orlando or Tampa, that's fine. But then I've got a salary competitiveness problem that, you know, creates some equity issues internally if I'm trying to compete with Orlando salaries. So those are issues we're having right now. I have to admit it's always been kind of thus. Throughout my career, we've had issues with here and in other places with attracting staff for reasons. I've always said, I love this work. Graduation is my favorite day of the year, followed pretty closely by the first day of classes in the fall, because you see people's lives changing right there before you. But explaining that and selling that to somebody who works in the, you know, works as a maintenance tech, sometimes, you know, they've got to put food on the table, and I get that, but it is an immensely rewarding job. And so, you know, we try to sell that.
And speaking of that, what are some of the, you know, and without giving away everything that you do, but I'm sure we have some listeners who may be in that similar situation. So what are some workforce-related solutions that you have for these problems that you are encountering with hiring?
We've had to kind of adapt and really just start thinking outside and say, okay, so how do we, you know, do we partner with somebody? You know, can we generate a partnership that would help support a position or, you know, fund some resources to staff? You know, one of the conversations I've had this with our vice president for advancement, and I've had it with my previous colleagues in the same area, is, you know, like, say we're essentially a community college, and when we do, at least the places I've been, I'll refer back to Liz Mendetto's comments that, you know, when you know one college, you know one college, right? But the colleges that I have been at, I'll say it that way, when they do like endowed teaching chairs or something where they're recognizing faculty, an endowed chair is some sort of stipend to the faculty member to go buy stuff or do stuff or go to a conference or something. So it's, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 maybe. Universities' endowed chairs underwrite the entirety of the faculty salary. You know, if you think about the endowed chair in mathematics at Princeton, right? That endowment is underwriting that salary. So my conversations with my colleagues in advancement is, why aren't we doing that? Or how do we do that? While we haven't, you know, I can't say I've been successful in making that stick, we've made some progress with some of our partners, particularly in healthcare, to say, look, I can't keep nursing faculty. They can go make twice what I'm paying them as a travel nurse, or you're paying them twice what, you know, you're paying them half again what I can pay them. But if you want nurses from our program, I need to have faculty. How can you help me do that? And so we've had some luck, some traction with the idea of funding some portion of that faculty salary from our business partners. You know, how broadly we can make that stick is, I don't know, but there is, I think, an opportunity there, at least in some cases, to say, we're struggling to compete with the marketplace. We're a public institution. I'm not going to be able to compete with what a private hospital is paying a nurse. So how do I get there? We have a product to produce. They need us too. So how do we get them to help us?
Well, shifting from that, let's shift to student access and outcomes. Let's talk about some of the successes you've had related to student success.
One of the things we started, and actually we started it kind of leading into the pandemic, is, you know, we've really embraced the whole pathways movement in terms of student advising and helping students be successful. I have to admit, I'm a product of a community college. I was having a good time when I got out of high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
so I needed a little guidance and, you know, was fortunate. Like I said, I had a really great accounting instructor and was fortunate to have good ones when I was a junior and senior, kind of guiding me along the way. So, you know, making those connections and helping students find kind of what makes sense for them. I always get a little twitchy when people say, well, you know, follow your passion. Well, you know, I'm not sure about that necessarily, but you can find something that you find satisfying, that you get something out of, and that, you know, kind of scratches that itch a little bit, and I think be successful. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's work, right? I mean, it's work. So let's face it, it's work. It's not play. Unless you're in the NFL.
Right.
So, you know, how you find a way to connect that student with something that they find some passion in or some interest in is important. And one of the ways that happens, you know, is got to be by engagement. I teach accounting as an adjunct. I highly recommend it. I would say to control, I did it as a controller when I was a controller for a while. And then I've done it now as a vice president. I like to say when I introduce myself, I'm here because usually when a student gets to my office, they're not happy and the odds are pretty good. I'm not going to make them happy. So in a classroom, I get to interact with students on a positive way, and it connects me back to what we're doing. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're doing.
Well, on that note, let's talk a little bit about mentorship. You touched on your accounting instructor that kind of, you know, led you in the right direction. And so I'm sure you're counting that person as a mentor. But talk to me about the mentors that you've had and how you're kind of giving back now that you've been doing this for some time.
Well, I mean, I think I've been very fortunate. I've had both good supervisor kind of mentors. You know, I was fortunate, particularly in my first higher ed job. I got kind of tagged into a project with the director of institutional research. He and I kind of bonded over some things that we had in common. And he got to be a very good mentor of mine and kind of advisor of mine, and talked me through a couple of things when I was kind of frustrated with how things were going. But the other thing I think he kind of instilled in me was, you know, that the data is important, and how we, you know, how we think about the data is as important as what the data ends up being. You know, he was very much, I mean, the numbers are the numbers, but you got to think about the story behind the numbers and be able to kind of tell a story with that. And so, you know, as I've pushed along, I mean, like I said, accountants are kind of numbers people. So, but I always think about, you know, what is this storytelling? You know, what are these numbers? What story is that telling? And how do I communicate the story I want to tell with those numbers? He was a real good, real help for me. And quite frankly, was an advocate for me in a couple of cases. My first CBO job, he was colleagues with the president that hired me. I happen to know that he gave her my phone number.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And said, call him, talk about something kind of related. And then that kind of turned into an opportunity to be a CBO. So from my point of view, you know, I kind of want to pay that forward. So when I come across folks, you know, that I think have talent, I want to encourage that, you know, and take the opportunity to, you know, when the opportunity presents, to put their name in play. You know, there are 28 colleges in the Florida college system. We all talk to each other. I've had any number of colleagues go, hey, I'm looking for a controller, or I'm looking for a purchasing director, or I'm looking for a facilities director. And if I know somebody and they're, you know, I think they've got talent and opportunity, I'm, you know, more than willing to speak up and say, hey, you might want to talk to this person, or call them and say, hey, you need to call and talk to my colleague here. Let me set up a time. So it's incumbent on us to think about both our staff, or the folks who report directly to us, but quite frankly, get out on campus and, you know, find, you know, is it a dean? Is it an administrative assistant? Is it, you know, somebody in financial aid? I mean, it can be anybody. And, you know, what opportunities can you help them find and help them be successful as well?
As we speak on that vein, we can go into the conversation of the future of higher ed and what you think that looks like, and your future in higher ed as well. So we can make it personal, but talk to us a little bit about the future of higher ed.
I think it's complicated, quite frankly. We're dealing with a very kind of interesting, an interesting dynamic from a just demographics and operational point with the enrollment cliff and okay, but I'm not sure how that, you know, that plays out differently, I think, in the different sectors. So that's, you know, that's kind of a thing in terms of, you know, the business model. I know, Nakubo has been working on the business model for the last several years. There are kind of fundamental things that we're still struggling with. Tuition dependent institutions, I can't grasp. I mean, I've worked in the public side my entire career, so you know, I've got colleagues that work in tuition dependent institutions, and I wish them the best of luck because that's a tough road to hoe. But you know, the other thing, and I just get on my hobby horse for a moment, the conversation about higher ed, I think, misses so much of it, because the national media will talk about Ivies, they'll talk about state flagships, and then every once in a while there'll be something about maybe a middle tier or a, you know, an R2 or some other. But community colleges are what, 25-30% of total enrollment, right? We're dealing with everything from dual enrolled high school students to 50-year-old career changers. You know, we're training nurses and police officers and firefighters and EMTs and plumbers and auto mechanics, and very economically prepping students to go on and be accountants and doctors and lawyers and whatever. I mean, it's always been that way. I mean, you know, I used to tell people, and I'm guilty of it myself. You know, if you ask me at a cocktail party where I went to school, I'll tell you I went to Florida State. I don't stop a minute and go, well, I went to Santa Fe and then I went to Florida State.
Right, right.
You know, but a huge percentage, I don't know what the number is in Florida, but a huge percentage of the juniors and seniors at state universities are graduates of Florida college system institutions. And so in Florida, they're talking a lot about workforce education and the stuff that we're doing, the auto mechanics and the law enforcement and the plumbers and all that. So, you know, college is a lot of different things. But if you think about what the general populace thinks about college, they're all thinking about Animal House.
Yeah.
And Ivy League. Yeah. I mean, you know, think about what, you know, I mean, they, you know, outside of what was a TV show, the Community, right? They really don't talk about anything to do with our sector in any sort of meaningful way. And, you know, I think they're leaving out something that's important and in some ways missing an opportunity to help students.
Yeah. To help, yeah,
you know, because mm-hmm. a student can be successful. I mean, you know, let's face it, right? You know, you can get a nursing degree in a little over 2 years. I mean, it's not quite 60. It's a little over 60 credits, but you can get a nursing degree in 2 years and make what $65,000-$70,000 a year, right? Or radiology tech or a cardiovascular tech, or I mean, there's probably 15 health science disciplines that are all good paying jobs. And so I think there's an opportunity missed there in the national conversation. I remember seeing, I don't know if it was on Twitter or someplace, somebody did a count of the number of times the New York Times mentioned an Ivy League school versus a community college. And it was like 1,000 to 3 or some crazy number. And I was just like, well, that tracks.
Yep. Yep. That tracks. What do you think we could do on the community college side of that conversation? Like, is there something that, you know, you feel that we could be doing to push the conversation?
Well, I think that's... We need to push that conversation. Again, the part of the problem is it's a resourcing problem. You know, your average flagship, right? Their budget is what, $1 billion maybe, you know, or more. I've got a 25 million. They got departments that are bigger than me. You know, I don't have I've got a marketing department basically of one. You know, and she does a great job of, you know, what she's doing, but, you know, how's she going to get a story placed in the Miami Herald or the New York Times or, you know, whatever. So what ends up happening, you know, is, you know, we're focused on our community. We serve a 3-county area. That's what we live, eat and breathe about, is what's going on in our community. But like I said, in the larger national picture, the whole story gets to be about somebody that, you know, I mean, you know, somebody that went to Columbia and ended up with $100,000 in student debt. I get that, but those aren't our students. And it's a challenge, you know, I've, you know, had to have conversations with legislators about, you know, they're reading the national media and they're hearing all this stuff. I'm like, those are not our students. I mean, we're 60% female, I think. You know, our average age is like 26. It's come down a little bit, but primarily because we've had a boom in dual enrollment. And so, you know, we're having to adapt as we go and we're doing that, but it's a very different thing than your traditional 4-year residential big time sports, you name it, institution. And No, there's something missed there to me.
No, I can see what you're saying, but you're doing such a great job in your community, and that's where your focus is. Yeah. And so, and I guess that's where it counts, right? Yeah. Right there in your community. So that's good. So before we close, Peter, I want to talk about your future in higher ed. You know, where do you see yourself in the next few years?
You know, I'm still having fun. So
that's good. That's good.
You know, I'll keep doing this for a while, and I've got a number of projects going on campus, and a couple that are probably going to start up here in the next year or so. So I'm gonna try to get those, you know, get those done. Like I said, I counted, it's 38 years. So, you know, I've been doing this a while. So, wow. You know, probably retirement's out there somewhere, but, as one of my friends likes to say, I'll probably fail at retirement too, because I can't play that much golf, and I'll keep doing this while I'm having a good time and feel like I'm making a difference. And then, you know, maybe step back and, you know, continue to teach and maybe do a little consulting or something at some point. But, you know, I don't have any big plans to change at this moment. I never had any interest in being a president, so that was never on the table.
Okay.
And I like what I'm doing, and I have a pretty good team. So I'm happy with that. And we've got some interesting stuff going on. So we'll just keep grinding away and keep grinding away. And see what happens.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Peter, for your time today. I really appreciate it.
All righty. Well, thank you.
And we want to thank you all for joining us today for this episode of CBL Speaks. It's brought to you by the National Association of College and University Business Officers. You can find resources for today's episode, as well as a wide variety of research and tools at nakubo.org. Make sure you subscribe to CBL Speaks wherever you get your podcasts, and so that you can get the latest episodes instantly. And on behalf of Peter Elliott of South Florida State College, I want to thank you for joining us on CBL Speaks. I'm Donna Shealy. Be well. CBL Speaks is a production of the National Association of College and University Business Officers. Audio engineered by Andy Nelson and True Story FM. Music by Michael Bean. Post-production support by Janelle Dempsey. And I'm your host, Donna Shealy. Thank you for listening.